Hello, everyone. Welcome to Ubi Est Mia. My name is Brandon Weatherby. This episode is with former Chicagoan, current Brooklynite, or whatever you call someone that lives in Brooklyn, Elliot Einhorn. The reason why we're talking to Elliot is because he is the frontman of the Scotland Yard Gospel Choir, an indie rock, a chamber pop, whatever you want to call them. There's a lot of them, and they make good music. Band out of Chicago. They recently released their first song in 5 years, and it's called Clark and Belmont. Sort of a farewell ditty, dirge, you might say, to the former Dunkin' Donuts and Alley and all those stores that over in Lakeview that kind of colored the neighborhoods. This episode, we talk about his exodus from Chicago to Brooklyn and his time there. We also talk about the podcast that he helps produce called The Talk House, which is a very great series of interviews of musician on musician and filmmaker on filmmaker. So if you're so inclined into that world, you'll enjoy this. So without further ado, here's Elliot Einhorn.
But you're enjoying your job.
Oh, I love it, man. I love it.
How did you even get involved in this?
This is funny. Okay, so do you remember that the internet sensation Samwell, who had that hit What in the Butt, the YouTube viral video?
Maybe.
This was this huge viral video that, like, it got like 60 million views. And that was in the days when 60 million views is equivalent to, like, you know, a billion views now, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And the song was on South Park. They did a parody, like Butters did a parody. And anyway, I helped my friend Aaron Ackerson out. He was doing a night. He used to do a night called Geek Easy, a DJ night, like a geek culture DJ night. And I was sort of just helping out with it. And he had Samwell perform at one. And we all went out to dinner after. And this was, you know, like 2 in the morning.
Uh-huh.
This is a really long answer. Sorry. I'm going to give you more of an abbreviated version. But, you know, I was asking Samwell about, like, sort of his, like, organizational infrastructure, and he had, like, nobody doing anything for him. It was insane. The only way he got stuff was, like, when people happened to come to him, you know? So he asked me if I would manage him, and I thought about it, and I really believed in what he was doing. I still think of him as, like, almost a sort of social rights crusader through music. He's an awesome dude, but I wasn't a band manager. So I said, listen, I'll manage you until I can get you to someone else, you know?
Okay.
But I ended up managing him for a year and a half or something, 2 years. And so we got this festival gig in Madrid. So it was called U-Fest. I don't think it was officially sponsored by YouTube, but it might've been, I can't remember. This was a few years back. And it was like us, Rick Astley, like, you know, from Rick Rolling, like all these crazy YouTube celebrities. You know that kid who raps with, who like lip syncs to all the raps? This was a few years ago, that like all the like famous rap hits of the day. So like he did that one with 50 Cent. Like he was there. There was all these bizarre people, you know?
Okay.
The pantsless train ride dudes were there. And at the airport, coming back to New York, this was just after Amy and I had moved to New York when her job brought her out here. I was hanging out. The kid who drove me, you know, they have vans. They'll drive you to the airport at these festivals. The kid who drove me had also driven the guys who were in front of me in line. And so he stopped and said hello and introduced us. And they were that band Battles. Do you know them?
I do know Battles, yes.
Another Chicago connection, because Ian Williams used to live in Chicago for a long time with Don Caballero when they came from Pittsburgh. But So he and I, so I was hanging out with Ian and Dave at the airport and on the flight, and it turns out Ian and I lived literally two blocks away from each other in Fort Greene. So we shared a cab home, you know, to the neighborhood, and ended up hanging out and becoming buddies. And when he got a call from Morgan, who owns Ribbon Music, that they wanted to do a podcast for Hamilton Lighthouser from the Walkman, and asked Ian, who would be a good engineer, Ian recommended me. He'd seen the off-Broadway stuff that I'd done, and he knew that I could engineer whole musical shows.
Uh-huh.
And so he threw my name in the ring, and I got the gig, and it turned out that it was the Talk House's first podcast in conjunction with Ribbon Music. And so Michael Azarad asked me, you know, he was really happy with the way it went. And he said, do you want to keep doing this? You know, we would love to have you as an engineer that we can go to again. And so it really worked out, man. And I started bringing ideas to the table, and they gave me a promotion to a, you know, producer credit. So so now I'm the podcast producer and engineer at the Talk House, and it's awesome because, you know, I get to work with bands that I absolutely love, and also I get to throw ideas out there myself. Like, I get to bring things to the table. Like, one of the ones I was most proud of was, and people who know the Scotland Yard Gospel Choir's music will recognize these influences, but I paired one of the guys from Belle and Sebastian with one of the guys from the Pogues, because they'd both written memoirs recently about their bands, and so they had this fantastic conversation about that, you know? So it's cool, man. So there's I've been recording for 6 minutes, so there's like a 5 minute answer to your question.
Which is perfect, because so the moral of the story is, when there's a guy from Milwaukee that has a song about the butt, you should jump on board, and then 7 years later, you'll end up recording two of your idols.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
So you mentioned your band, Scotland Yard Gospel Choir. That's sort of the reason why we're talking. I saw the Gospel Choir's first, I think it was sold out, if not sold out, it was close to, first appearance at Metro.
Oh, nice.
I want to say this is what, 2, 3, 4, something like that?
That would have probably been 3, I would guess. Okay. Maybe 2, because we started in 2001 in a very low-key way, and then the first record dropped in 2003.
I think it was your record release show at Metro.
Yeah, that was a very special night for us, man.
And now, 12 years later, you're no longer in Chicago. I'm no longer in Chicago.
Yeah.
And some of the things that are really that were really close to the Metro, both physically close to the Metro, are no longer there. You have a brand new song for the first time in 5 years.
Yes. I can't believe it's been 5 years.
Could you really not believe it's been 5 years? I mean, it feels like 5 years.
It feels like 5 years, but in some ways it feels more like, in the internet age, 5 years for a band is like 20 years. You know what I mean?
You could have had an entire band cycle broken up and gotten back together.
Oh, totally, totally. We're like the Mamas and the Papas at this point. We may as well be from the 60s. But on the other hand, you know, I toured with the choir for 10 years, you know? Yeah. And so it was like, it's just hard for me to think that 5 whole years has passed without a release, you know? Because we always had stuff coming out. I mean, we put out 3 records, but we also had singles, and, you know, we were always doing like cool live stuff. And so it always felt like there was something going on or brewing to be going on soon, you know?
Well, one of the good reasons the Scotland Yard Gospel Choir hasn't released anything in 5 years is because you are no longer a resident of Chicago.
Yes. Yes.
You have now lived in New York City for 5 years.
4 years. 4 years.
It's 2016, sir.
Yeah, well, I moved here 2012 in February.
Okay, I apologize. I concede my point. I thought it was 2011. I apologize. You've been there for 4 years. You're one of the only people I know that had a write-up in the Reader about leaving town.
Oh, that was really special, man. That was really special. I felt that gave me a warm
WBEZ. So you had competing people trying to vie for the Elia is no longer in Chicago press.
Oh, yeah. It felt really special. And the thing was, man, like, I grew up in Chicago, you know, so that's still my city, you know. It's like I don't identify as an ex-Chicagoan, you know. I'm a Chicagoan who lives in New York now, you know. And like, the way I think about it is, like, I was born in Wales and I spent a few months every year there growing up. Like, I'm Welsh. I live in America and I'm American too, but I'm Welsh too. You know what I mean? It's like these parts that are inextricably part of you. Mm-hmm. And that's how Chicago is. So when we left and we got that, you know, those write-ups, it just felt like you don't make art for validation, or maybe you do in like a secret corner of your brain, but it felt like a really nice moment where people actually cared about something that we'd done, you know?
I like how it took you to have to leave to know that people cared about you.
Yeah. Fuck you, Chicago. You could have told me while I was alive.
One of the things that you talked about in that 4 years, not 5 years ago, but 4 years ago in those pieces, is sooner or later you'd be back. This was just a temporary stop in New York. Do you still feel like you're going to return to Chicago?
I do think so. I don't know when, because there's so many exciting things going on here. You asked earlier, sort of off mic, you asked about having kids, and it is something that, you know, we think we'll probably do in the relatively near future, you know? So, We'll have to see how that works in New York. I don't know. But, I mean, my American family are mostly in Chicago. And I'm still there like 4 or 5 times a year. So I could definitely see coming back at some point. I really could.
You're the one who brought up kids, so I feel like it's okay to talk about that.
It's okay to talk about it, yeah. I'm not saying that it's imminent, but it's something that I've thought about, you know?
I mean, we're both of age where that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I'm 36 now, man.
You're the first guest that's been on the show, and any of my shows, I think, that has had their wedding announcement written up in the New York Times.
Oh, my God. Could you believe that, man?
That is, if you Google the listener at home, if you Google Ilya's name, that's the first hit you'll find is his wedding announcement to the lovely Amy, who works for Pitchfork.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy, man. It was pretty crazy. They actually call you to vet you, and so they call and they say, "Is this Amy Phillips? Is this Ilya Einhorn? Do you live at this address? Do you have this job?" And it was funny because, like, one thing they asked me is, "Are you the Talkhouse producer or a Talkhouse producer?" You know, like, they want everything, you know, and I said, "I'm the Talkhouse producer," and I felt very proud of our scrappy young startup, but it's like, they really vet you, man. But yeah, it was, I couldn't believe that happened, man. That was cool.
Well, that is very, very cool and very weird. I know that your wife is from not Chicago.
Right, Philadelphia.
Exactly. And you guys met in Chicago. Does she have any desire to go back?
Oh, yeah, she loves Chicago, man. She loves Chicago. It's funny because when we moved out here, you know, we came because Pitchfork's editorial moved out here. Mm-hmm. And that's actually what brought Amy to Chicago originally. She's from Philly, but she lived in New York. She went to Columbia in New York. I always joke that she went to the real Columbia. I went to Columbia College Chicago. But she went to Columbia here, and then she, you know, was a freelance journalist here, and she wrote for all these awesome papers, the Village Voice, and, you know. And then when she signed up for Pitchfork, they moved her to Chicago. We met in Chicago, but then they'd opened the Brooklyn office by then, and more of the editorial were being hired or moving out here. So in the end, we had to go. She didn't want to go. I didn't want to go. But once we got there, she still didn't want to be here, and I quickly came to love it.
Really?
Because I'll tell you, man, living in New York is a lot different than touring to New York to play CMJ for 2 nights where you're so tired you have to take a nap in a van on Houston Street. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like when you have your own space here and you start to meet people out here, and there's so much going on here. It's like, it's just, it's really crazy how many cool things are going on at any given time. I mean, Chicago's the same way. You know, like, Chicago's the same way where it's like there's 3 events that you legitimately really want to go to on the same night, you know? And you could hit 1 or maybe 2. But New York has that magnified because it's so much bigger. There's so many more people. Mm-hmm. And I just fell in love with that, man. And the more jobs that I got here, the more work with cool clients that I did, like, the more excited I got about stuff.
Would you be able to do something like the Talkhouse in Chicago?
Yes. The hesitance is that being on the ground here does afford a couple different things. Like, I definitely just meet people here. I meet artists of let me come at this in a different way. New York is the media center, so bands that are local bands here that are as big as local bands in Chicago are national bands here. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Because there's media covering everything. So there's so much more of that going on here that sort of that's the mix I'm in. And so I find it a lot easier to find artists that I really want to work with that live here. You know what I mean?
Is there any artist that you either toured with or played with in Chicago that you just knew if they had only not been in Chicago, they'd be much bigger?
Oh, I mean, there's so many, man. Like, Ezra Furman is finally getting, you know, like, he's finally blowing up. Mm-hmm. But, like, that dude's a genius. And if he'd been in New York, he would have been, like, you know, he would have probably come out, you know, like, there was, like, the Moldy Peaches and Regina Spektor that came out of the sidewalk anti-folk scene. Mm-hmm. He would have definitely been that, you know, he would have been way bigger way sooner. And, I mean, he did live out here for a while, parenthetically. But, like, you know, he hadn't been here the whole time. I I don't know about my own stuff. If we'd been able to get the breaks out here that we got in Chicago, we would have been a bigger national band than we were. We were sort of a minor national band, the choir. Mm-hmm. Do you notice I'm speaking in past tense? It's kind of sad.
Well, do you – yeah, is it – I mean, technically it's not dead, but in your mind, is it dead?
It's wrapping up, you know? It's wrapping up. It's like okay. It's wrapping up. It's we have another record. We're looking for a label. We split with Bloodshot because, you know, Bloodshot really wants their bands touring 150 dates a year. And we couldn't do that anymore physically, you know. Those days were over for the choir. And a few people moved on after we were in that horrible tour accident. You know, people – one of our guys became a chef. And, you know, Mary moved to Kentucky. So, you know, people went on with different things in their life And so we very amicably split with Bloodshot because we just didn't fit their model anymore, you know. And they didn't fit our model. So now we're looking for a label, and I want to release it. You know, I want to do like a proper release, but then after that, that'll be it for the choir. And I'll just keep focusing on the new project, Fashion Brigade, that I started.
Since the accident, do you even have the desire to tour anymore?
Yeah, I love certain parts of touring, man.
Really?
I don't have, like, you know, there's one thing about being on tour when you're a smaller band that it's sort of a slog, and like, I don't miss sleeping on people's floor next to three other people. You know what I mean? Sure. Also on the floor. Or like renting one room at Motel 6 with two beds and there's seven band members. I mean, those were realities for us. We were a big band as far as the number of people on the road at any given time. And we weren't making a ton of money for the most part. I mean, we'd play one gig for $5,000 and then we'd play 10 gigs for $50, you know, this is like, you know, when we were young. And, so it was sort of, I don't miss that stuff, but I really miss meeting the other artists. You see the way you're always hearing about new stuff, even from the people in your band, cause you spend so much time in the van. It's like, you know, you learn about all these amazing, like I didn't really get into the Replacements. It's not like I'm a huge Replacements fan, but like, I didn't really listen to their stuff till Mary became obsessed with them and played it all the time in the van, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, I know I turned a lot of the choir onto the Smiths from the same thing. Like, I would always be playing the Smiths.
But aren't you getting that now with the Talk House? Like, you're meeting all these people, and unlike a tour, you get to go home.
Yes, and I love that, and I love being able to, like, come home and have my studio here and you know, be able to see Amy. Mm-hmm. But it's not quite the same. I mean, there's something different, you know, and I was actually just talking to Michael Azred about this recently, who runs the Talk House. He's our editor in chief. Cause he was asking me with the new band, like, do I want to hit the road? And I told him I want to hit the road selectively.
Okay. What does that mean?
Like I want to tour, but I don't want to slog it out. I don't want to do like 100 dates where I'm trying to break the band. You know, I want to do more tours like where the choir was at towards, you know, the last few years of our career where we were a band that was opening for much bigger bands. And those were cool shows. Like, you know, we toured with the Arcade Fire. We toured with Devotchka a ton, you know, and like we were walking out on stage and we're playing for 1,000 people, 2,000 people, 5,000 people. And I'd love to do that kind of stuff again, you know, but I don't want to do the like 20 people in Iowa City anymore. I'm done with that shit. And I don't mean to sound like privileged, you know, because it's a privilege to be able to have 20 people to come see you in Iowa, but you can't do it forever. You know what I mean?
Listen, as someone that drew two people in Des Moines, I would be very jealous if I could draw 20 people.
There you go. There you go.
It means a lot to me.
Yeah.
The reason why we're talking, though, is it's not about Fashion Brigade, which is your new band. And we should actually play some Fashion Brigade right now. We're here mostly to talk about Chicago and the band, both the former band, the current band, the everything. The song is called Clark and Belmont.
Yes.
And it's an ode to the worst Dunkin' Donuts in the country. The Dunkin' Donuts used to be on the corner of Clark and Belmont. Here's the subject that you do not address in the song, and it really angers me.
Uh-oh.
Did you ever get towed and or get booted from that Dunkin' Donuts parking lot?
Worse.
How could anything worse happen?
I was arrested there.
For?
Trespassing.
Okay, good.
They got sick of all the punks hanging out there. And I'll give you the exclusive story here.
Thank you.
I have not used drugs for over 20 years, pretty much. But I was taking my first acid trip. And there was 30 punks hanging out in the Dunkin' Donuts parking lot. You know, mohawks, leather jackets, knives. And they just got sick of it. And so they circled us with paddy wagons and took us all to jail. So I went to jail tripping on acid for my first time ever. And I'm going to say that's worse than getting towed.
Yeah, but do you have any idea how much it costs to get towed when you're a delivery driver?
That's true. Acid was only $5 back then. So,
how did you get out of jail? Did you just have to spend the night?
Oh, my mom had to come get me, man. And my sister came just to laugh at me. Literally, just to laugh at me.
Do you remember how much your mom had to pay to get you out?
I don't know. That's a good question.
I bet it was cheaper than getting towed at Dunkin' Donuts.
I'm sure. When we were young punks, sitting out front of the Dunkin' Donuts, taking shit from the grown-ups. We never thought we'd be their age someday. We thought that it was our time, and that our time was here to stay. And now I miss the punks and the smell of piss. Those summer days of tripped out bliss. My baby and your cherry.
Have you ever purchased anything from the alley?
Oh, yeah, for sure, man. For sure, 100%. I bought two Bauhaus shirts there. I bought, I didn't buy my leather there.
Are your two Bauhaus shirts still in the rotation?
No, I've got one still.
Okay.
The other, I gave one of them away.
Well, I follow you and your wife on social media, and I know that you got all of your entire, 2016 wardrobe from the most recent Morrissey tour.
Yes, totally, dude, totally.
One of the things about that's dangerous about reminiscing too much is you want to live in the past, but you don't seem to actually want to live in the past, which is healthy. Are you grateful that you got out of Chicago so now you could look back and appreciate those things, or would it not have mattered?
I'll tell you the only reason I'm happy to have left Chicago is that I was spinning my wheels towards the end, you know,
the what band, do you mean?
Well, we've been in that horrible accident. So the choir was essentially on hiatus, you know, and I was just working a job that I didn't, you know, care about anymore. And, you know, it's one thing to work a job that you don't care about when you're in a band that's having success because you're on an upward trajectory, you know, and we were. For years, you know, we put out our own record. It did really well, like way better than most people get to have their own self-release record do. Then we signed to Bloodshot. We have these two records that do pretty well. And then all of a sudden it was just gone, you know? Mm-hmm. And it was gone. You know, the accident happened at the end of 2009. And, I mean, people were recovering. Like, there was serious recovery going on for a couple of years, you know? Aside from like the maintenance recovery that's going on now for a couple of the members, you know, but like, I mean, really active, serious stuff. So we couldn't tour, we couldn't release stuff, you know, mm-hmm. Which is why parenthetically I started Fashion Brigade. That was when I started recording by myself because the choir were laid up, but I was really just spinning my wheels there. It was like the thing that had meant so much to me was like maybe done forever, at least on hold for a long time. And so coming to New York, I had to rethink sort of who I was and what I wanted to be doing. And that was really important. And that wouldn't have happened in Chicago because I come to Chicago. Here's a tip for the stalkers. I don't think I have any anymore, but in case I do, like if you want to find me in Chicago, just go to pick me up. I'm still there all the time when I'm in Chicago, you know, I still eat at Giordano's once or twice a time when I'm in town. Like, I do the same shit there all the time. Whereas in New York, I'm always doing different stuff, you know? And with new people. So I had to open my mind. The thing is, growing up in Chicago, like, Mark Yoshizumi, who's in the choir, is one of my oldest and best friends. We went to grade school together. So there was sort of a feeling in Chicago like I topped out on good friends. I didn't need any more. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I didn't explore new relationships in the way that I did once I moved out here, because it was like there was like a, in a way, there was like no way anyone there could replace the people that I already had. You know what I mean?
Sure.
My old crew. And so that was really cool, man. So I don't know. That was something that was important for me to experience. And I'd never lived anywhere else for more than a few months at a time. I'd lived in Wales for a number of months at a time. I'd lived in South America for a number of months at a time with Mark, actually. But this was the first time I'd lived for like a year plus somewhere else.
And you're glad you're in Brooklyn.
I love it, man. I love it.
What neighborhood are you in?
We're in Fort Greene.
What's the one thing Fort Greene has over Logan Square?
Well, I'll tell you the opposite. We finally just got our first record store here.
Really?
Yeah, there was no record store here, man. It's like we're sort of like too close to other hip neighborhoods that already had them. Mm-hmm. But the dudes from Captured Tracks, which is a really cool label, and they have a store in, I can't remember, Williamsburg or Greenpoint that I've been to a few times. Anyway, one of those dudes, Mike Sniper, co-opened a record store in our hood finally. So there's something that Logan Square had for a long time that Fort Greene was behind on.
One of the things that I've always noticed about you and your band is you're very positive, and you don't play music that you would associate with negativity in any way.
Oh my God. I fooled everyone then.
Maybe so.
I mean, what about like the songs like This World Has No Place For Me? I mean, I wrote a whole record about a bad breakup.
Sure, but that's internal. That's not like you're the worst, I'm better than you.
Oh, I gotcha. Gotcha.
I like
it's the more like, whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah, I gotcha.
You're more sad than angry.
Yeah, okay. If we're defining it that way, I agree, yeah.
That's why yes, I know you're from Chicago, but I always associated you guys with more of a European influence. Maybe it's the Bell and Sebastian, maybe it's because where you're actually from and your family's from. But like, how do you identify in the Chicago music scene? Where do you fit in? Because I have a feeling that you're the kind of guy that thinks about where you fit in the canon.
Well, thank you for the sort of implicit idea that we're in the canon, in the Chicago canon, in that question. But, I mean, my biggest influences, man, were growing up in Wales. My friend James he was a rich English kid. And you'll see a lot of rich English people who own summer properties in Wales. And he lived in Manchester, and this was during the Madchester scene. And, you know, the Stone Roses, 808 State, you know, Happy Mondays. And he would make me these cassettes that he like dubbed himself. And I'll tell you, in New York, there's always a siren going by. But that was my biggest influence, man. So I was obsessed with British music even as a, like, 8-year-old, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's definitely, that's for me, you know, the biggest stuff. But, like, I was also really into, like, I mean, the one thing that Chicago had when I was growing up, or there were many things, but one of the things was amazing indie labels, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, we had Touch and Go, we had Thrill Jockey, and we had Bloodshot, and I was a huge fan of Bloodshot. I mean, I interned at Drag City in college.
When did you figure out that Chicago had all these things? Because I'm also from there. I didn't really know about any of this stuff until college.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I mean, I was definitely, I've always been much more into British music and labels. You know, like, I always preferred the NME to Rolling Stone, you know?
Sure.
And, yeah, so I don't know. But, I mean, the thing is, like, I can tell you what really hipped me to Chicago stuff. It's two things. It was the Chicago Reader. It was Peter Margasack's old column, Post No Bills. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you, when he gave us a mediocre review, a bad review, it broke my heart. I was devastated. But and then Sound Opinions, because Jim DeRogatis and Bill Wyman started it when I was still really young, before Greg Kot came on board, and they moved to BEZ when they were still on
XRT.
And so, like, that was how I first heard the Mekons, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And there's, you know, you draw that connection. It's direct for my career because, like, I first heard about the Mekons on there, got obsessed with Jim's show, and then, you know, once Greg joined, it was even stronger. And they were the ones Jim gave me my first break. I met him in a coffee shop I was working in, gave him a CD, and next thing I knew, I got a call from a friend saying, "You're getting played on XRT right now." And then that went on to, like, I ended up being on a label with John Langford from the Mekons, and he played on a choir record, you know?
Do you remember what coffee shop you were working at?
Yeah, Cafe Avanti. It was on the Southport corridor across the street from
the Music Box.
Music Box, which, again, parenthetically, finally, Daniel Knox is getting some attention in Chicago. I brought that dude's shit. I have loved his music. We met when I was probably like 19, and he was about the same. I literally brought his CDs down to South by Southwest on a choir tour there because I was trying to convince people to sign him. I thought he was a fucking genius, man.
He also wrote the theme song for this show.
Did he really?
Oh, yeah.
So oh, my God. That's hilarious, dude.
At the top and bottom of this show. It's funny to think all it really takes to feel worthy in a place that you're from is, like, the reader saying nice things about you and selling out, like, a small hometown club.
Oh, totally, dude.
But and it's really sad because if you look at how – that doesn't pay any bills.
No way, man. No way.
It's crazy.
You sell out Chubas and you don't make much money. But, like, but dude, the thrill of selling out Chubas, like the first time that happened, you know, you sold out like – it's like 275 capacity or something. It's like – it's immeasurable, you know? And you know, it's like you brought up that Metro gig. Like the first time we played Metro, it was insane, man. It was so special. It's like – where all your heroes had played. Morrissey, Bell and Sebastian, Bob Dylan, you know, like everyone had played there.
Is there anything like that even left, though? After you do it, it's kind of like it's the diminishing returns, isn't it?
No.
No.
And I'll tell you why. It's always the same on a different level. Like, okay. I remember having this funny thing. We were on tour with Devotchka, and we used to have the same manager, and we had a great relationship with those dudes. And, we were in, I can't remember what city, but we were doing a Midwestern tour. We might have been in like Detroit or something or Grand Rapids with them. And they were talking on stage during soundcheck about how one of their crew had like, they'd been touring with Arcade Fire and one of their crew had like been a little bit gauche, I guess, and like tried to push Devotchka Records on Arcade Fire. And they were a little embarrassed about it. And I remember thinking like that same thing permeates every level. It's just different levels of fame. You know what I mean? But like, you know, we had that when we were playing at Burkhart Underground. It's like, oh, dude, you're hustling too hard. You know what I mean? Like, relax a little bit, man. Chill, you know? And then here's these dudes who are like have scored the soundtrack to Little Miss Sunshine, had a huge success. They're touring with Arcade Fire. And they're having the same feeling at that level. So I realized the anxieties and the achievements are relatively the same throughout the ranks. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. The ranks of fame, because you're still having the human experience just in different contexts. But so like, I still have thrills like for Fashion Brigade, man, I fucking recorded Exene Cervenka from X came and sang with me, you know? Like, I couldn't believe that was happening. I couldn't believe it was happening. And, like, I'd already, like, the choir had recorded with, like, Martin Atkins from Public Image Limited, John Langford from the Mekons. Like, you know, we'd had all these really, like, people who were important to our personal canons work with us, you know? But I still got that thrill. Like, when I walked in and Exene was there, ready to record my song, it was like, it doesn't matter, you know? It's like... Do you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
So that for me, the excitement is still there, man. If the excitement wasn't there, I wouldn't do it. It's not like I get paid enough to do it.
Yeah, you're working in the music industry. There's not a lot of money.
Yeah.
Are you happy that you're still working in the music industry?
Honestly, this has been one of the best years of my life, man.
Oh, good.
2015. It was one of the best years of my life. I got married. I started, like, you know, working for the Talk House. I'd been working for them in 2014, but I got the producer promotion in 2015. I started working with Pitchfork, producing podcasts for them. I started working as a consultant at Paper Magazine. It was like I just couldn't believe how satisfied I felt with the work I was doing, you know? And I'm still doing the work with like the off-Broadway stuff that I do for the Possibility Project. So it was like, you know, it just felt like the sort of personal and professional really locked in a wonderful way. Like the things I'd been building up for years really locked in.
It sounds like you left for all the right reasons.
I guess, man. Yeah, it's worked out. I I'll always love Chicago, and I think I'll always love Brooklyn, you know, as crazy as it is. Despite the fact that I just read there's a $100 gold-plated donut being sold in Williamsburg, I'll still love Brooklyn. And I'll love Chicago because they would never put up with that shit.
Give it 6 months, and I'm sure it'll be in the loop.
Oh, no.
If you would like more information on Elliot, follow him on Twitter. It's at sign Elliot Einhorn, ELIAEINHORN. There you can find his music from the Scott and Her Gospel Choir and his other project, Fashion Brigade. You could also find the podcast that he helps produce called The Talk House. It's all over there. If you'd like more information on this podcast, please follow us on Twitter. It's at sign Ubi Est Mia Pod. We're also on Facebook. Just type in Ubi Est Mia in that little Facebook search tool and you will find us. If you'd like to follow me on Twitter, I'm at sign YMTE. My other show is called You, Me, Them, Everybody. That's available at youmethemeverybody.com. Our theme songs are written by Daniel Knox and our art is by Dmitry Samarov. Thanks for listening and have a wonderful night.